Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It is Friday. It's almost the weekend, November 21st, 2025, episode 115, if you're keeping count. On today's show, we'll talk about the Porsche Cayenne Electric. It's got its official specs and reveal. The Jeep Recon EV was revealed this week, and Audi planned their own off-road EV version of a Scout. and of course, much, much more. It's kind of an off-roader week and truck week this week, but that's okay. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the baronial, Mr. Tom Mulogany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic as well. And let's get into it then. So, Dom, we need to start, first of all, by asking, where in the world are you? And have you come down with the inevitable sickness that you're going to get from being on a plane for the last couple of weeks?
And it's pretty interesting being back in Vietnam after, I think, 3 years. I was here several years ago with VinFast. They brought me here. And it's been interesting, like, just driving from the airport to here again to see the change in the traffic. Like, there's still a ton of scooters, but more of them are electric. And there's still, you know, a fair amount of cars, but a lot of the cars, there's a lot of electric cars here. And they're almost all VinFast. So that, they're doing good here in this country. I'm not sure how they're doing at home in North America, but at least here, it looks pretty interesting. I was walking along around the other night, and there was a lot of, like, very new-looking VinFast scooters, like, a lot. Like, a good 20% of the scooters were, like, these new-looking, and they look good. Because I drove VinFast scooters when I was here the first time a few years ago, and I had a great time driving them, but I couldn't say they were really good. But these look pretty professional, pretty proper. I haven't had a chance to ride one yet, but I had that on my list.
When you were in Italy, you were making the most of the local pizza, and so you should. Have you been in Vietnam long enough yet to get reacclimatized to the local delicacies?
I've had some delicacies so far. I mean, some noodles, and actually, yeah, yesterday I had lunch. They brought up this big bowl of, like, beef skewers and pineapple, and then they brought up this package of rice paper and said, "Here you go, make your spring rolls." And I'm like, "Here's the sauce to dip them in." And I'm like, "Okay, here we go." So, I
forgot you were going there, because the last time we text midweek, you were getting on a plane to Singapore, and I thought you were there for the duration, but obviously you've moved on to Vietnam. So how long are you going to be here for? Not that I'm tracking you around the world or anything, but how long are you in this location for?
I'll be in this spot in Vietnam for 1 month, and then I move to another spot for, I think, 2 months.
Wow.
Very cool.
That's so cool. All right. Well, so far the Wi-Fi, this Wi-Fi is holding up, and we'll get into it. And Tom, the reason why we're recording this a few hours in advance is because you're going to be on a big journey, which you can't talk about yet, but when, and it's not a cannonball, I'll tell you now, it's not an EV cannonball, but when will you be able to spill the beans?
Oh, really soon. I'm pretty sure we're going to be, I could say it's a collaboration with Kyle and a bunch of other people that involve a bunch of electric vehicles traveling long distances. That's about all I can say.
All right.
So, okay. That's going to happen pretty soon. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it will be the longest I've ever driven continuously. Right. So it's going to be fun. We'll be posting little snippets, the group along the way. But, we're going to have a fun time.
All right, let's get into it. Now, this first car was revealed this week with the official launch, and it sets new benchmarks for performance, technology, and charging in the luxury SUV segment. And you've driven this one already, not this final vehicle, but a car that was pretty close to this. This is the Porsche Cayenne. So two versions. There's the base model and the Cayenne Turbo, both electric. So top specs, power, 1,139 horsepower. That's overboost with launch control. 0 to 62, 2.5 seconds. Top speed, 162. A push-to-pass function for another 173 horsepower. The base version is not too shabby either, by the way. All-wheel drive standard, adaptive air suspension across both, turbo with torque vectoring, battery capacity, 113 kilowatt hours usable, WLTP'd at 398 miles. Look, we're all friends here. Let's call it a 400-mile really large SUV that'll regen at 600 kilowatts. That has to be up there with, you know, Formula E levels of energy recapture. It's racing car stuff. It is 800 volts, as you probably worked out by now. DC fast charging, 400 kilowatts. So that's a 10 to 80 in under 16 minutes. It'll add 202 miles, they say. Maybe this is WLTP I'm talking, in around 10 minutes, which I know, Tom, this is your preferred weapon of choice in terms of distance and time combined as well. It will charge on 400 volts, but only at 200 kilowatts. Now, Tom, I said you've driven this already, but these weren't the finished vehicles, but you've got a fair amount of experience. How much of this did you know that you couldn't tell us? And how much of this is new and how, you know, impressed or not are you with the Cayenne?
Yeah, you know, so I was privy to pretty much all the specs when we did that range test. Porsche invited myself, Kyle, and also Matt Hogan from Inside EVs to do range testing. And the interesting thing was, it wasn't just a range test. We were part of their engineering validation. So there were engineers in the car with us. Everything was being recorded. And they actually used our data to help them like craft the EPA range rating and everything. You know, it's all part of their testing. And we drove out in California, out towards like Nevada. We all of us finished up with like 350 plus miles of range without draining the battery down to zero. We all had like 3-4% battery left because they didn't want us to brick the battery on these like engineering vehicles. I was so impressed with this thing, how it drove, and the efficiency was incredible. At 70 miles an hour, it averaged 3.3 miles per kilowatt hour. And we were the course. We climbed like 1,500 feet and then went down 1,200 feet, then went up 1,000 feet. Not a good course for range testing. I'm confident if I get this thing, and I will in the spring when they're available, when I road test this here in New Jersey, if I have good weather and not a lot of wind, it could do 400 miles. I'm confident it'll do 370 to 380. It could do 400 miles at 70 miles an hour. This is, honestly, after driving it, I was like, you know, I mean, and I admittedly, I say this often, I really wanted one. The truth is, really, and I'm like, maybe I'll sell the Rivian. You know, not, I love the Rivian, but I've had it for a few years, and I need to cycle cars for content and so forth. But honestly, I think this is the best Porsche electric vehicle that won't sell.
Yeah.
They're not going to sell a lot of these. And I think Porsche knows they're not going to sell a lot of these. And it's terrible that they're not going to, because it's such a great car. It drives fantastically. It's incredibly efficient. It charges ridiculously fast. It charges to 80% in 15 minutes. That Porsche had to say it was 16 minutes because of the way it when you make claims. But the engineers are telling me, like, dead on, it's 15 minutes and like 10 or 15 seconds. But they're like, we can't say it's 15 minutes by law or whatever, that we have to round up. So that's why they announced 10 to 80 in 16 minutes, but actually does it like 15 minutes and 10 or 15 seconds. That's bonkers. For a car with a battery this size, and this is whole new generation on top of Taycan battery-wise. The cells are different. They're more advanced. They're a structural part of the car. There is no battery tray with the Cayenne. The modules are the structural part of the vehicle, so that they were able to eliminate the whole battery tray and just have cells with individual modules, and that's it. It's a structural part of the bottom of the car. So, Porsche, it's such a shame that it's not going to sell well. They did so much with this vehicle. It's one of the most advanced vehicles on the road now, and I just don't think they're going to really sell a lot of them, and it's a darn shame because it's a fantastic car.
Even Porsche know that they won't sell a ton of these because they have also readjusted their combustion plans. They're going to stay with combustion a little bit longer because they know that the people who buy these vehicles are probably going to want the choice of having combustion. And yet when Porsche were asked this week and they offered, well, what's the best one we sell? They went, oh, the best one's the EV. Like the quickest one is the EV. And the one with the most performance, that's the EV. And the electric version of the Cayenne is going to be the best one. And they said, okay, so, but we're also going to sell combustion ones because that's what our customers tell us they want to buy for now, which is frustrating. Must be frustrating for them as well, but it's the lay of the land and it's where we are, so we go with it. But yeah, even they went, well, no, the electric version's way better, but we're going to sell, you know, hybrid versions as well. So, yeah.
That's going to be frustrating because, you know, they put all this effort into it, and their buyers, you know, they have, most of them, I believe, you know, Porsche Cayenne buyer, I don't know how much it's going to cost yet, but a lot, probably over 100 grand, especially for the higher specs. Mm. You know, they can afford charging equipment. Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't buy that. It's like so much better. It's not like they're going to go, you know, maybe it's something about the weight and maybe how it handles, but I'm sure this is going to handle like a Porsche. And so I don't really know what the hesitation might be there. When we look at numbers, like we talked a lot about EV adoption last week, and, you know, there's a high percentage of people who want to go EV when they buy their next vehicle. But of course, then again, as I say that, I'm thinking, okay, but this is maybe an older buyer, and it is the older buyers who are more resistant, but they'll be missing out because this thing's pretty awesome. I mean, I've heard some grumbles about the styling on the front, but you kind of hear that about almost every new car, right? It's like, this little part of the car, you know, doesn't pull up my heartstrings or whatever, but you know, the specs here are so good. Like the efficiency, it's we'll have to make a comparison.
0.25 drag coefficient for a big SUV is incredible.
And it rips. Right. The turbo rips. I mean, really? It's one of the fastest Porsches available.
So it's got active aero on the turbo anyway. It's got some what they call rear blades. I haven't seen those. Right. And then adaptive air suspension and active torque vectoring on the turbo as well. And they said that the mechanical brakes are used so infrequently because the motors can handle all of those braking events. Pricing, yeah, I didn't write down US pricing, stupidly. But UK pricing, £83,000 base and £130,000 turbo. So, yes, yeah, that's $150,000 probably for, you know, to top spec it. But again, if you're in this market, there shouldn't be any concerns about charging at home. It's going to be one of multiple vehicles that you own. You're going to have the best charging. You might even plonk down the 10 grand or whatever it is, 7 grand for the inductive charging in the floor of your garage. So having got to get your hands dirty at the end of the day and plug anything in. It must be frustrating for Porsche to have this incredible vehicle. Key rivals, BMW iX, Lotus Electra, Audi Q8 e-tron. Even some of those don't even, you know, match up to this. Tom, when you were driving it, did they have any kind of synthetic noises or anything turned on? Tom, were they trying to make it sound like a Porsche, or did you not kind of get into that?
No, I'm not sure the engineering vehicles that we had the option to even turn on any type of synthetic noise. They were pre-production, you know, so there were certain things that didn't function on them was not necessary, I suppose. So no, at least in the car I drove, we didn't have any type of synthetic noise or anything going on there, and I certainly wouldn't have turned it on if it was available.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I'm typically not a fan of that.
No, I'm not. But you know, some people who are in this market that want a vehicle like this are gonna want to have, you know, rumbles and vibrations and all of the stuff that comes with, you know, setting fire to, and combusting things. And so I understand why Porsche are really nervous about going with that all EV promise. And they're just trying to tread their way carefully and keeping, you know, engines and hybrids around a little bit longer than they plan to. But absolutely incredible vehicle. As you say, they won't sell enough of these, but absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. And one other thing I want to point out, a lot of people, when I see online in particular, in social media and so forth, seem to be complaining, hating the curved screen. And I don't really know why that they kind of, it's kind of like their instinct, like, oh, I wouldn't want that. But they haven't seen it and they haven't used it. Mm. You know, the those of us that sat in the car and used everything was really nice. I have no qualms about that curved screen whatsoever. I found it, you know, actually a pleasure to use. So, you know, I didn't understand why it seemed like everybody was like, ugh, why would you do that? It works. I think it's positioned in a nice place. And I don't see the downside of having that.
So Kyle did a little video on the Cayenne, just like a minute long, a little clip, a preview of his upcoming reviews, and he calls out that screen, you know, specifically in that short period of time, where he just says that maybe it doesn't photograph well, but in use, it's great. He loves it. So, and you do too, apparently. So,
I thought it was fine. Like there was no, I was kind of taken aback when the first pictures and videos of it came out. It seemed like everybody hated it. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, explain to me why, you know, you think that's a bad concept, you know, maybe because it's different. I didn't know why it was so like taboo. People were like, oh, why would you make a curved screen like that? I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we
kind of see it in this.
Yeah. You can kind of see it in that picture we've got on screen right now. It is. I think it's nice that there are so many, because I'm doing a lot of coverage on my podcast of Chinese cars. In fact, I've launched a spin-off podcast called EV News China, not alongside EV News Daily, because there's so much coming out of China. And so often we're talking about, well, these are $12,000, $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 equivalent vehicles. So don't get me wrong, they're incredible. But all Chinese cars, they are identikit. They are an iPad plonked on the screen. And to find a new Chinese car that doesn't have an iPad plonked just there in the middle is pretty rare. And here's Porsche engineering something bespoke and people criticize it, which is everyone's right to. But I think let's praise Porsche for giving this a go. It works really nicely from those people that have driven it, like Kyle and Tom. So give it a go. Like they're trying something a little bit different from all the identikit interiors that people criticize in EVs. Finally, Tom, before we move on, amount of physical buttons versus stuff done on screen. What's the mix?
So not a lot of physical buttons. Yep. You know, it was, I thought it was a good balance. I'm certainly not someone who is anti-physical button. You know, I think the right balance of them works. I don't think there's, I'd prefer to have a few at my disposal rather than just complete, like, you know, Tesla, where it's just a screen where everything controls. I understand a lot of people like that, you know, jolly for you. But I thought that was a nice balance of what a lot going on in the steering wheel. Very familiar with other Porsches. And, you know, I thought it was fine. I thought the layout was nice. There's a decent amount of physical buttons, but you do control a lot from that curved center screen also. I thought it was a good balance, Mark.
But we haven't got Kyle on the show because he's actually driving to your house at the minute and doing a long journey to you. But if he was here, what he would say is don't buy it, but buy it in 2 years' time when depreciation has knocked about half the price off of it.
It's so sad. Like, I swear, I love what Porsche is doing. They are really, like, setting the bar for electric vehicles as far as I'm concerned with Taycan, this new second-generation Taycan. And I've said this on the show that I'm definitely going to buy a second-gen Taycan. I even talked to Porsche about it. I'm like, as soon as, like, I think rear-wheel drive, performance plus battery, when I can get one that's like a year or two old that took that first initial depreciation, I want one. But like now I'm like, do I really want that or do I want to use one of these? But then it's going to take me, then I got to wait another year or two longer, yeah, you know, before the used ones of these are going to be out there. So I don't know. But I swear I'm going to end up with a used Porsche, whether it's probably the rear-wheel drive Taycan, but after spending time in this, I think, wow, like, you know, like the Taycan is such a specific vehicle. Like, yeah, you know, it's a sports car, you know, and you know, it is what it is, and it's wonderful for what it is. But then when you look at the Cayenne, like, it drives like a sports car, but now you've got all this functionality. Now, yeah, it's like if I get the Taycan, I can't get rid of the Rivian. But if I get a used Cayenne EV, then I can, you know, and now I can get some money back. It's like I don't have to have that extra car in the driveway. So decisions. But I swear,
decisions. Yeah.
I want one of these vehicles used once the initial depreciation takes effect. I want one of these.
Right. Hopefully we're tight for time. We're going to move on. That's Cayenne's in the books. Let's move on to something a lot cheaper now, and this is the all-new Jeep Recon, and this is a vehicle which you will be getting all electric, what they call the trail-rated Jeep. This is basically an electric version of the Wrangler, right? So we're going to get a picture coming up on screen very soon. It's boxy. It's rugged. There's removable doors. It's an upright glass house. It's Stellantis, so it's a 400-volt EV platform. It's going to be made in Mexico, actually, in the Toluca plant there. So US and Canada, sometime 2026 first, but this vehicle will be coming to other markets. The United Kingdom, the European Union, will get this. Powertrain, dual motor, obviously all-wheel drive. So one motor on each axle, 650 horsepower, 620 pound-feet of torque. 3.6 seconds, 0 to 60. I don't think you're going to be, like, a lot of these vehicles, it's like the Hummer can do it in less than 3 seconds. I mean, what, you don't do the 3.6 seconds on this vehicle. I think they said about the top speed, but you don't need a top speed in this. It's, VMAX is not the point of this vehicle. What we're going to talk about is the motors. 250 kilowatts on each axle. The front one will do a disconnect for efficiency. 100 kilowatt hour pack, mounted as low as they can go for that center of balance being low, but also significant steel underbody protection. 250 miles on the EPA cycle. That's respectable. But everything optimized for abusing this thing off-road as a plaything. Large diameter half shafts, heavy duty CV joints, full length skid plates. They say it's trail rated. The first trail rated fully electric EV is how they pitched this with what they call the Select Terrain Traction Management System, with different modes for sand and mud and rock climbing and stuff like that. I can give you approach angles and all that. I've got it all in the notes down here. But Dominic, you were across the news this week. You're playing a video in right now that you'd lined up for this. Not a vehicle that we would go crazy over, but what about, it comes to North America first. What do you think of this?
Yeah, well, this is I could go crazy over if it was great to drive. I'm not sure. This has got the same. It feels like it's got a lot of the same drivetrain components as the Dodge Charger and the other Jeep, electric Jeep that they have, which, you know, I can't even remember. It's something S. Maybe that's how, you know. Well, they've done with promoting it and everything. I don't even know what the Jeep name is of it.
Or the Wagon, the Wagon ARS? Is it the Wagon ARS?
Yes.
That you're thinking?
I believe it is. Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So it's not, I have to, you know, have to hunt for that name even, because it's not, I haven't seen any coverage
right.
of it at all, really.
No, you
know,
you're
people
right.
drove it one time, said, nah, and then they've moved on to other things. And I don't know what's going on with the Wagon ARS, but it sounds like this has like a similar drivetrain. So, you know, it looks, I love the concept of it. Like the doors come off, the windows pop off. It's like a Bronco Jeep kind of thing going on. And there's a lot to like about that. But do they have the electric part kind of figured out? And as well, 250 miles of range. So this battery is like 13 kilowatt hours less than the Cayenne, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like over 130 miles less range, because it, you know, this, like the Porsche has maybe a better aerodynamic profile, and it probably has a silicone carbide inverters, so, you know, more efficient power switching from AC to DC in the vehicle. So I'm just not convinced that they'll move a whole lot of these, and the price starts at 60,000 or above 60,000, something like that. I'm not sure, you know, and it looks okay, but, you know, it's not pulling at my heartstrings, you know, like.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get taken off too many engineers at Stellantis' Christmas card list if I say that, you know, I think the engineering at Porsche is probably on a different level to
sure.
what they had access. It's not, I'm not saying it's parts bin stuff, but it's just.
Right.
It's going to be a different level of what they've got access to put inside this vehicle. Like I said, it's a 400-volt platform, and it's what Stellantis have got in their supply chain and have got developed to stick in a vehicle. So, yeah, it's a long way off what we've just been talking about. 33-inch off-road rubber on chunky wheels, that full-size spare exposed on the tailgate, underbody, high-strength steel skid plates and all that kind of stuff. Classic Jeep Q. It's got that 7-slot grille, a very boxy silhouette with the short overhangs. This is a lifestyle vehicle, surely. So there's probably two people that buy this, isn't there? I don't know, you tell me, because it's not going to be a big deal over here. But it's lifestyle. It's probably the same as the Hummer, actually. It's lifestyle. Of people who want to drive it because it looks cool, and you feel like if one day you found yourself on a mountain by accident, you'd be able to get off of it. And there probably will be some people who at the weekends have a hobby or an interest in doing some trails and doing some stuff like that. But then you have to ask, it's such a kind of a niche thing. Is an EV the best choice? Because I've never said, look, EVs are the best thing for everybody all of the time today, and may never will be. But for a very specific use case, it's going to be very heavy. And is this the best vehicle to do that with? Of course, Rivian over the years have, you know, made a big deal of, hey, our very capable off-road vehicles, we're lifestyle vehicles that can go off-road. This fits to me in the same mold. But Tom, what do you think?
I'm looking up the specs right now compared to the Rivian R1 and R2, because I know we talked about the Porsche before, so we kind of compared it to that. But this isn't going head to head to the Porsche. You know, this is right in between Rivian R1S and R2. And the R2 is about 85.6 inches long, and this is 193.3. So it's probably right lengthwise, right in the middle of the two Rivians, which are, you know, its direct competitor. Yeah, it is right in the middle, because R1S is 200 inches. It's virtually lengthwise. It's right in the middle of R1 and R2. So I think those are the vehicles that are going to give this a hard time, but particularly the R2 that's coming out, it's going to be $10,000 or $15,000 less, you know. And you know, I think you'll get the Jeep loyalists, the people that love the brand, and you know, their lease is up, so they're going back to the dealer, and you know, the dealer, this is the shiny new toy. But look at the range on it. You know, it's you know, they talk a lot about being trail rated and everything. Well, you know, you got to get to the trail, then you got to use a lot of energy on the trail, and then you got to get home. You know, in many instances, there aren't chargers right where you're going to go, you know, off-roading. So if you're starting out with 250 miles in ideal conditions, you know, I don't know how much off-roading you're going to do. You know, this needed to have Rivian-type range, you know, 320, 350, something like that, to be a useful, true off-roader, you know. And so I don't know. I don't know who, you know, I don't think true off-roaders are going to buy this. And you know, it seems like that's, you know, it's trail rated, and, you know, that's what the Jeep brand's all about. But, you know, I think this is going to be people that you said that want to, you know, it's a lifestyle, that want to be seen in the new Jeep driving around. I don't think many of these are going to go off-road a lot. I think it's going to be the people that buy them, you know, are going to be the soccer moms driving the kids to practice. Yeah. And that's pretty much going to be it.
And looking at the press release, I don't see any mention of locking differentials, which I feel like, you know, true off-roaders, that's kind of something that they're going to look for. We try to do that with, you know, electronic locking differentials, you know, to kind of simulate that kind of, you know, no give, both wheels get all the power, you know, everything turns. But I don't think this is going to do that. And I know, I'm sure that Kyle will have this off-road before too long, and I kind of feel like he's going to pan, you know, hopefully not, because it'd be great to see Stellantis have a hit on his hands, you know, because it really, in the electric side, it really needs a hit for North America.
I think it needed 125 to 135 kilowatt hour battery pack. I think it's about 25% short of what they really needed to make this thing competitive. You know, and, you know, Scout's coming out with their extended range truck, and, you know, that would be a much better choice to go off-roading with, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. I wish it was, I wish they gave it a little bit bigger battery. And also, you know, which probably won't turn off too many people that aren't really in the know as far as charging or whatever, but this thing's not going to have necks.
What?
It's I've been looking at their website, and they show pictures of a J1772 charge port, and then a video here that we were able to take a still picture of here. My writer Mark Kane from EVChargingStations.com sent me this earlier today, because Stellantis has not been talking about the charge port. Like, it's kind of, they've been kind of been quiet. They didn't have any pictures on the the media site where they have all the photos, nothing about the charging. But there was a short video clip showing somebody plugged it in, and Mark took a screenshot of it here. So that led me to go to the Jeep website, and there is a picture of the charge port, crystal clear picture, and it is J1772 in CCS. So, you know, that's surprising. Pretty much all the new models that are launching in 2026 have NACS now. And, you know, this isn't going to have it. So that's a little strange.
I'm absolutely flabbergasted because Stellantis made a big deal this week about, you know, our cars can now access, we'll be able to access Tesla superchargers, and, you know, we can have adapters sorted. And Stellantis also mentioned that they are going to, when they make their vehicles for not only North America, but Japan and South Korea, not sure how big they are in those markets, but they would equip them with NACS. And so they weren't specifically talking about the Recon here, but as you found that screenshot, and also a massive charge port as well. So what is designed for, I don't know, also maybe it's a Chinese market thing. They've got to put GBT and I don't know, but that's a huge area. And if you were putting NACS on the side, you just wouldn't design, like, industrial design doesn't work like that. You would make the best possible solution. You would put a barn door on the thing for NACS. So it has to come with NACS. It has to.
It's not. You go to the Jeep website and scroll down about halfway down, and you'll see a picture of an orange one, and the charge port staring you right in the face. And it's surprising because, you know, I know the automakers made deals with Tesla that all the new vehicles launching in 2026 and beyond were to have NACS ports. That was never reported, but I've had more than one OEM tell me that's the deal we made with them, that new vehicles, 2026 and on, like, for instance, Ford can continue selling the Lightning with the CCS charge port because it's not a new vehicle. But all new models from 2026 on had to have the NACS port. So I don't know how this is launching. It's a new model. You know, it's a little surprising to me that it's coming out as a 2026 model in 2026 with the J1772. That's surprising.
You heard it here first. You heard it here. You heard it on evchargingstations.com first. it seems that would be crazy. I wouldn't fall off my chair if Stellantis came out and went, oh, no, we got that wrong. We were just taking pictures of validation vehicles. The media team got that. No, so, because it has to come with NACS. Anyway, I'll stop it now and I'll move on. Jeep's global... carry on.
No, I was going to say, go to the Jeep website, meet the all-new 2026 Jeep Recon, and scroll down halfway, and you'll see charging solutions, a nice, big, bright picture of the NACS port.
Wow.
I mean, the J1772 port. So,
crazy.
You know, I mean, I hadn't seen anything until, until this, but that's what it is. Yeah, click on Jeep, Tom, or Martin.
Yeah, I generally don't.
I'm looking up there.
Yeah, scroll down a little bit.
Also, while you're finding this, my final point on this is because it's Stellantis family stuff, I think that a vehicle that is designed, obviously they've got the off-road chops and it's trail rated and all the protection underneath, I would expect to find inside would be some big old chunky buttons for doing stuff. Like, you know, this seems like a vehicle that...
Lower, Dom. Sorry, Martin.
It won't go down.
You gotta scroll down. Keep going.
This seems like a vehicle that wants a big set of switches that you're going to throw and feel like you
could...
There
we go.
Oh, there it is!
There it is!
It's not NACS! If you're listening to the audio version of the podcast, we're on Jeep's website right now, and there it is on the charging page.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Okay.
Yeah, it's got the DC part covered up. It's got the little cover for the DC part of the springy flap. CCS.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a miss. But okay.
7.6 kilowatt charging too, and AC is not you know anything to write home about. But you know, beside the point, the NACS is obviously like the big kind of miss. It's like,
I mean, it's 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, 32 amp charging is so 2015. You know, it's you know, it'll probably suit most people just fine because you only replenish what you need that day. Okay, so you know, sometimes I think we get a little carried away with high speed AC charging, But some people, not everybody, some people actually would be able to use this. The people that drive really far during the day, you know, the 7.6 kilowatt charging, you're only going to get about 6.8, 6.9 into the battery pack. If you're charging for 8 or 9 hours overnight, you come in late at night, you got to leave first thing in the morning, and your battery was pretty much depleted, you're going to leave with like a 70 or 80% battery, which, again, for most people, it's going to be fine. But damn, like you know, this seems like charging's a miss.
That's a miss. I'll whip through the compass quickly. It'll be Dom's challenge if you can find a picture of the compass before I move on to the next thing. Jeep's global reveal this week also included the compass on the Stellantis STLA, or the Stella, medium platform. It's bigger, more modern, and now fully electrified, plug-in hybrid, and full BEV with multiple versions, front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive, up to 400 miles on WLTP for some of the versions. It'll charge at 160 kilowatts DC fast charging, almost 400 horsepower on the all-wheel drive version of the Jeep Compass. Larger, more tech-focused cabin inside, bigger screens, more comfort they've focused on. Why isn't it coming to America? Well, this will be built at the Jeep Melfi plant in Italy. For European sales, plans for the US and Canada have been officially paused. Tariffs and what they call a dynamic environment means it's too risky for Jeep to move forward with a North American launch. So, no scheduled date for US availability. Europe gets these by the end of the year because production started this week. And so, this vehicle seems like, well, actually, if the US could get this, like, it hasn't got all of the off-road stuff we've just been talking about, but it feels like a Jeep dealer could sell more of these. But you don't get to do that.
And it's like, and we've been talking about more affordable cars, more affordable, you know, EVs. This is more affordable than the $60,000 Recon. But like you said, it's built in Italy, which, you know, so that means tariffs. But yeah, I don't know. For Europe, though, I think I've noticed in Italy, a lot of people, the Jeep brand is pretty popular there. I saw, you know, a fair amount of the Jeep Compass and what's the little one, a Renegade. There, you know, there was a fair amount. And so this might do okay over there, in at least parts of Europe. You know, the Jeep, that's one thing Jeep does have going for it. It does have this, like, the strong brand image name, and yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think over here, Jeep means something very positive to most people. Most people would have never have owned a Jeep or even thought about buying one. But the actual name Jeep, I think, means something positive to a lot of people. They would instantly, they could probably draw a picture of one, you know, of like, this is what an off-roader looks like. It'll look like a Wrangler. So it's got a brand, but they've had a really fallow period. And they're coming back. They're doing well. Right. We are halfway through our all-wheel drive week on the podcast, unintentionally, by the way, but just everything we seem to be talking about has got all-wheel drive this week. But before we get into the second half of the podcast, there is a big awards ceremony happening. So get your posh frocks and tuxedos on, and let's find out more about it.
And it's time to hand out the hardware for the best chargers of 2025. We'll start off with the Grizzly Ultimate 48, the Grizzly Ultimate 80, the EVCO EV Power, ChargePoint Home Flex, the Emporia Pro 48, and the Tesla Universal Wall Connector. These have been selected as my best chargers of 2025. Congratulations to all of the companies that sell them, and thank you for making high-quality, safety-certified electric vehicle charging equipment and offering it at reasonable prices.
Well, I think that deserves the cheapest animations that we've got access to here on our platform, and there we. So, Tom, once again, such a baller to have some awards made and to get them engraved. It just looks so cool. So, obviously, evchargingstations.com. You got to look at a write up about it at some point, or a video about it, a full video. But you finally made your decision. Was it a tough choice this year?
Yeah, it was. There were some newcomers that were pretty good units. But, you know, when it really comes down to, I weigh price heavily into it, value. Because, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, there was only a handful of good chargers out there, to be honest with you. The rest of them were garbage. We were getting stuff coming over from Asia that was really completely unsafe and just horrible stuff. Cheap, the race to the bottom, the buy, you know, lowest price on Amazon. But what's happening now is that industry is getting better. And even the lower cost charging equipment is getting to be higher quality. And more of the companies are realizing that they have to get it safety certified. Now, there's still some really cheap units out there that aren't safety certified. But you know, I'm surprised that more and more units that I'm getting, I'm like, this is pretty good. I just got a interesting thing. Just today, a company hand-delivered me a charger. They sent somebody to China to come to the U.S., for one day to hand deliver me their new charger. It's a new charging company because they wanted to meet me and said that, you know, we actually designed this according to your specifications and things you say you need. They said, we're not going to launch a charger without having a NEMA 1450 plug with heat sensors in it and also in the J1772 connector end. So like, you know, so it'll shut off if there's the NEMA plug is starting to overheat. They did, they like, followed all, everything that I said, and they designed their charger quarter. So I had somebody come here today, bought me a nice box of tea from China, like the, and a assortment box of tea, and said that they, you know, they'd be honored if I would review their charger. So I'm going to be doing that at some point in December. But the point is, the companies are making better equipment now, and that's good. So it's harder and harder for me to choose. So more and more, I weigh on combination of features and price, because I don't think we should have to spend $700 or $800 for a quality charger. You know, we're getting really good charging equipment out there now in the $350 to $550 price range. And that's a good win. I mean, you know, it wasn't too long ago where the high quality 48 amp chargers like the Wallbox and the ChargePoint Home Flex, they cost $700. They were both selling them for $699 for a while, but competition has force those companies to push the price. And now Wallbox hasn't lowered the price as much as ChargePort has, but the ChargePort Home Flex now is under $600 and it used to be $700. So, and they had to do that because the companies like United Chargers coming out with $400 safety certified high quality units forced them to. So it's good. It's good. And Emporia is really killing it right now. I mean, they have the Emporia Pro, which does you know, intelligent load management, all included in the package for $599. So there's other chargers that will do intelligent load management, but they make you buy different equipment, like the Tesla wall connector will. But Tesla won't sell you the module that you need to communicate with this to do the load measurement. You've got to find it online, and they make it very hard for you to do that because they want you to use one of their certified installers to do it. They don't want people doing it themselves. So, I mean, Emporia just puts everything in a box. So like, here, this is all you need, $599, and there you go. So that the Emporia Pro, which is new for this year, actually came out, I think, the end of last year, but it's a super deal at a great great price.
Brilliant. All right, thank you for that. I love that they dropped off they sent someone to China and then dropped it off at the State of Charge garage.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing. That's
great.
He flew to California, spent like a day in California, then flew here to New Jersey just today.
Just
landed
to
here.
Hand deliver.
Hand delivered the charger to me in my little box of tea and said, you know, we'd be honored if you would review this. And I was like, yeah, I mean, hell, I have to now. You flew. Yeah, to
you have to. You can't be
I
like,
feel obligated to do
I'm
it.
I'm busy.
But right. I have to say, we unboxed it and I looked at it and everything. The specs seem off the charts. Like, I think they did their homework. It does load balancing, intelligent load balancing. It does power sharing between two units. It's got the heat sensors in the NEMA 1450. If you want to use it as a plug-in unit, it'll shut off when the plug hits like 180 degrees or something like that. Or no, it'll lower the charge rate. And then if it hits a higher temperature, it shuts off charging. And it has also heat sensors in the J1772. I mean, very few chargers available today have that the heat sensor in the plug. That's why we're seeing these cheap NEMA 1450s melt all the time and catch on fire. But it seems like this unit, I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's Iylo, something like that. But I'm looking at the box over here. But yeah, I'll be reviewing that soon. It, you know, the point is the equipment's getting better, and that's a win for EV drivers. Prices are getting lower. The equipment's getting safety certified. They're adding all these great features that we couldn't get just a few years ago. And that means we're you know, the drivers are the winners.
Absolutely. Now, I know I said that we were halfway through, but we are a lot more than halfway through, because the last vehicles we'll talk about aren't really big launches or anything like that this week, but worthy of discussion. Now, Dom, I don't know if you can find online a picture, or it's in the show notes as well. There's a link to it for the KGM Musso, M-U-S-S-O, the KGM Musso EV, just launched in Australia. So it's gone down under for 60,000 Aussie dollars, which is 38,000 US. So this is its first conventionally styled factory-built electric ute, because they call them utes down under, with all-wheel drive. Now, KGM is formerly, I think, SsangYong, but it's South Korean. So they've beat the other South Koreans, Hyundais and Kias, to the punch on this one. And in ute culture, Toyota's really big, BYD, Tesla, obviously big in terms of the EV market over there. But what about electric trucks and utes down under? Well, they derive it from the KGM Torres, that's a mid-size SUV, and then have built on top of that. So $60,000 drive away. There's a front-wheel drive version and an all-wheel drive version as well, which is only $64,000 Australian drive away, by the way. WLTP'd at 380 kilometres, aimed at the private buyer and to undercut things like the LDV ET60, which is a lot more money. And there's some big Chinese names entering the Australian market, but then the South Koreans turn up with this, a very conventional looking ute for tradies to use, and it's all-wheel drive, and it's not going to challenge anybody, and it's got some half-decent specs, and it's another vehicle that the rest of us can't get, because I'm not sure I can get that over here either. But we get some interesting electric trucks. I think there's one's called the E-Teron 9. What's that one? Is that... I need to check which one that is. But here's the South Koreans going to Australia. $38,000 US. Brilliant. I don't even know the kilowatt hour pack in this.
I was looking at this. I'm wondering how it stacks up against the BYD Shark, because that's a big one. The Shark.
But that's not pure electric.
The Shark isn't, no, but then I was going to say the Geely Radaris. I mean, it's called different things in different markets. The Radar in some markets, they have a pickup truck, all electric pickup truck as well. I'm not quite sure how they stack up, but that will be this thing's competition. But this thing looks more ute than more traditional Australian ute, not quite pickup truck, not quite car. Yeah.
Our tradespeople have some competition. We have white van culture over here, transits and stuff like that. But Australia is all about the ute, and brilliant. I just tick so many boxes. Brilliant for just such little money. But there we go. So well done, KGM. All right, let's move on. Hyundai teased a new concept this week. We won't spend too long on it. It's a concept, but it's fascinating because it looks really funky. And Hyundai have got a bit of form lately in releasing concepts and then coming with vehicles that are really, really close to it. This called the Crater concept, as in, yeah, a crater. Global debut at the LA Auto Show. Chunky bodywork, big off-road tyres up to 35-inch, front and rear locking differentials. They said it's a concept at the moment. Snow, sand, mud mode, and all the rest. They've put a fire extinguisher inside it and a first aid kit and a removable Bluetooth speaker because you've got to. Big roof rack, some... pixel LED lights, water-resistant materials, and, you know, hose the thing out. And for those of us watching or looking at the YouTube version, the history that they've got of taking vehicles like, you know, the Arniq 5 and Kia EV6, when these were first shown, these vehicles were a little bit, oh, that's interesting in concept form, and they came pretty close to it. So I don't even get a bigger version of that picture, but super chunky, super kind of moon vehicle kind of looking. But if you were going to go for something wild and crazy, would you go with that or the Recon? I'm not sure if it's a direct competitor or not, but yeah, it's interesting.
Well, I think they do mention that this will have locking differentials, if that's you know, a thing that you look for in an off-road vehicle. Like, yeah.
You think the Ioniq 5N, like, you know, they lost money on that, you know, yes. But they made a splendid, incredible electric sports car. I mean, I loved my time driving it. I had so much fun driving it when I had it for the weekend. I didn't think I was going to have the – I knew I would enjoy it, but not as much. I didn't want to give it back. And I had the artificial sound on, and I was switching gears and everything. All the things that I say I don't need in an electric car, but they did it so well that I actually really enjoyed it. So I love that they're not afraid, Hyundai, to dump money into these sort of, these vehicles that they're probably not going to make money on, like a wild off-road type vehicle. They're not going to sell them, you know, by the tens of thousands, per month. But I like that they're investing in it. And, it really shows that they're in it full on in electrification when they don't mind making, edge case, low volume vehicles like this that are just fun and show what they can do with electrification.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? I'm going to scroll and leave it on a picture like that. I think this is the mistake that I've mentioned it a few times. Rivian made by launching the R3 with the R2 and then the R3X. And everyone went, wow, that's so, bold and interesting. And I'd really kind of like one, actually. Now, that was toned down a bit from something like this. But, this definitely takes your breath away when you see something like this, because you think, well, Hyundai, if they wanted to, could go ahead and make something that looks pretty similar, because that's what they've been doing with their concept vehicles lately. This is next level bonkers, but super brilliant. Absolutely love it. You got some better pictures there. Fantastic.
I could see a production vehicle on this, and I think it would probably, yeah. Well, so it's four-door. Okay. Yeah.
Let me show you the interior. That's crazy.
How cool is that? Yeah.
Hey, look, if this is a weekend vehicle or a leisure vehicle for you, I'll have some of that, please. I mean, wow, super cool. That's a Motor Trend we were looking at. Thank you to Motor Trend for providing a brilliant set of galleries for us to have a look at of this, the Hyundai Creta concept. Useful if you are going, to Mars. I don't know, or the moon or something. It looks brilliant.
Full roll cage and everything.
Oh, like man.
That, Jeep talked about their vehicle being trail rated. This looks like it definitely would be able to handle at least what the Jeep can.
Yeah. So what have we got here? A little shot of the interior, part-time four-wheel drive. And yeah, you would think that, this looks chunky. This looks like you could really abuse it and it would take the abuse. And as you say, Dom, see it, like things like locking diffs, which, don't mean anything to me, but are a really important part of buying decisions for people who are serious about taking these things off-road. So let me leave it on that picture for one final second before we move on.
I wouldn't expect the coach doors to make it.
No. Although, what's the big Genesis that had coach doors that I've talked myself into a podcast cul-de-sac here?
Q9?
I don't know. So Genesis are coming. So Genesis, which is the, all part of the same group, are launching a big, luxury, probably even three-row SUV. I forget the name of it. And then when they showed the concept of that, it had coach doors. And now it's getting really close to launch now in the US, and it's still got the coach doors. There are some pictures of it with conventional doors, but also some really late-looking vehicles that are on the road now. I think a bit of camouflage left on it with the coach doors. So they've obviously worked out, engineered a way of doing that. But yeah, I think Tom's right. On this vehicle, it'd be tough to justify the cost. Right, before we head off, let's talk a little bit about some news this week, which I was surprised about. So, Scout's on the way. Scout is in a battle with the US dealers because they want to sell direct, and the US dealers are going, well, no, you're a Volkswagen, and we have contracts with Volkswagen, so we'll sell, let's not lose any revenue, and we'll sell Scout through dealers, and Scout's saying, oh, no, we're not. We're not Volkswagen. I don't know if anyone ever said that, but we're not Volkswagen. And they're trying to argue that through the courts. It's a tough case to argue, I think, for them. And it is made more difficult, I think, when things like this happen. Audi this week, news from Germany coming in. Audi will develop their own large off-road SUV targeted at the United States, positioned against other luxury off-road models like Land Rover Defenders. Built on top of, well, the Scout platform. The SUV will share the platform and its production site in South Carolina with the Scout models. So the same underpinnings, the same packaging, because it's all Volkswagen Group. I think if I were the legal representation of the US dealers, I'd be sleeping pretty well with all the news that keeps dripping out. So this is just clearly Volkswagen doing sensible things. Sorry, let me take that off the screen. There we go. And adding that picture in. So it's sensible things like doing what Volkswagen should be doing, which is if you've got Scout, own it and say, well, yeah, we can use that with Audi as well. The Audi model is expected to use an electric powertrain with a range extender, which is what Scout have talked about. Plug-in hybrid style architecture, but you know, battery electric drive all the time with an onboard combustion generator, and so it kind of makes sense. This was a report from Automotive News, I think, citing Automobil Vocker, underlying the vehicle is being developed for the American market to leverage that Scout technology. Seems like it would make sense to me, but Tom, what do you make of this news? I think Audi are onto a winner with that or not?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really big hit here in the U.S. A plug-in hybrid with long range like that. But I thought of the exact same thing that you just mentioned was my first thought, Martin. When as I was reading it, I said, you know, this is going to really hurt their case. Fighting in court that no, we're not Volkswagen. We're we're a sub brand of Volkswagen, but we're our own brand. Now they're making vehicles or vehicles for other Volkswagen nameplates are going to be made at their factory, you know, with their platform. I agree that this is giving the NADA, the Dealership Association, a lot of ammunition to say, hey, you know, don't let Volkswagen pull the wool over your eyes. This is Volkswagen. You know, this isn't, they're just trying to get tricky with this name. But yeah, I mean, this is what the public here wants, these large SUVs. The plug-in hybrid seems like it's something that, not that I would really be interested in, but a lot of people that are EV curious, that are afraid of going full EV, would want. And Audi's a trusted brand here. If they're able to put their version of this Scout out at not a crazy price, and it's got a nice AER with the plug-in hybrid feature, it could be something that Audi does well with.
Yeah, I think there is a future, didn't there, for EREVs and plug-in hybrids in the US?
There is. I wish there wasn't, but there is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, no, I it's get kind it. Of like I we're going it. Backwards, but that is where we're at.
Well
we'll see.
China's actually been there for 18 months,
when we get
it?
One.
Yeah.
But EREVs are doing so well right now in China, you know.
4 months
if you look
in a row.
At, other markets like
yeah, 4 months in a row. Norway, it's been down in China now. You know, the EREV boom or the right. EREV interest may have peaked already.
Right, because they have all electric vehicles that kind of have the range and fast charging that need to kind of make up for, you know, older EVs, you know, and why people would go for an EREV. So. Like in Norway, like what I was about to say is they're all electric, you know, numbers are huge compared to the plug-in hybrids. It's like a smidgen of like a couple percent of their new sales now. So when you see like a market like that in Norway, the Norway consumer is kind of like pretty kind of close to the American consumer from what I understand. I was talking to William from Roaming Norway about this a few months ago, and yeah, the Norwegian customer is, there's a lot of parallels with American customers. So I don't know. For now, yeah, I think it will, especially for the first year or two. I think, especially with our whole situation, our whole, you know, political climate and what's available. I think for now, I think this will do pretty well, or should do pretty well. But just going forward, after like 4 or 5 years, I think we'll see a BEV version of this catch up if they can get the, you know, the fast speed and the large enough battery so there's no range issues, and just charging speed is really kind of the key.
And getting that infrastructure. Yeah, I agree. Hey, let's put this one in the books. We are done. We don't do too many of these recorded ones because we love the live streams and putting your comments on screen, and we like talking to you in the comments. And it's a really big part of the show that we do here. But occasionally we have to do this. It's late for Tom. It's the middle of the frickin' night for me, and it's very early for Tom all around the world. We wanted to bring you the show this week. There's some good news, but it would have been a little sketchy doing it live. But thank you so much. If you've got this far in the podcast, as always, we love seeing you on the live stream. Back next week, and in the course of the week, leave a comment on the YouTube show, and we can read that as the week goes on. Hit like and subscribe on the videos. It really helps us spread the word about the show. Thank you for joining us. Next week, I will want to know what "see you later" is in Vietnamese. But for now, let's stick to where you were last week. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.